There are no people in the future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome once again to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. Yes, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. You know, here on Out the Coop Live, August 17th, 2020, this is a space where we get to talk to progressives, to activists, and troublemakers of all sort from right in our own backyards and across the country. So Out the Coop Live joins our weekly Friday show in which Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. And you can get both by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. But you can only join the live conversation through the Podbean app on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern. We're also streaming this on our YouTube channel, too. So if you want to head over there, got to watch it there. You get to see my ugly mug and then the rest of the audio stuff there. You can support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Or you can show us some love during our live show by sending us a little gift through the Podbean app. You see, they got this little thing at the bottom of the app, right? It's a little gift icon, right? You click on that, right? And you can send us a virtual cup of coffee or a love balloon, some roses, even a gold mic, you know, knock yourself out, right? Just get yourself some golden beans. That's what they actually call them, golden beans. Like we're in some freaking fantasy land here in the podcast, but whatever. Get some golden beans. You can send the love. The gifts that you send us help support and expand this podcast. And I'll tell you what, tonight's show's got you all fired up. You know, take a quick break and then tune into the Rick Smith Show's live stream at 9 p.m. tonight on his YouTube channel, Twitter, Facebook, wherever he's streaming. And a special shout out, as always, to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at SongADayMan. That's SongADayMan with two N's. Jonathan Mann, two N's. Jonathan holds that, you know, the Guinness Book of World Records of writing the most songs consecutively in days consecutively. I don't even know how you say that, but that's the idea. So on tonight's show, I am absolutely freaking thrilled that I'm joined by two organizers from the Racial Justice Organizing Committee in Philadelphia, Tamara Anderson and Dana Carter. Tamara Anderson is an advocate for children and teens, professional artist, singer, director, editor, freelance writer, blogger for over 20 years experience in education, and now I'm tired of talking. But click on the link in the show notes for her long list of credits. And yes, I did see you on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. That's all I'm saying. And she's also one of the founding members of the National Black Lives Matter Week of Action at Schools. And Dana Carter is a racial and social justice advocate for urban learners at PA Level 2 Elementary Education, K through 6 certified teacher. In addition to organizing the Racial Justice Organizing Committee, Dana is an educational policy advisor with the Melanated Educators Collective. She's been involved with Philly Education as a K through 12 teacher and an adjunct faculty member, as well as an educational activist since the turn of the 21st century. I'd like to be able to say that. Right? So it's like, you know, it's like we're in some sort of kind of like sci-fi space universe here. Since the turn of the century. God, I remember growing up thinking back, you know, you talk about the turn of the century, 20th century is like so long ago, but here we are here at the beginning of the 21st. And I got to say, you know, I remember, and I talked a little bit tomorrow about this ahead of tonight's show, as we're just talking, getting ready for it, that I remember actually kind of coming across her work with Shira Cohen back in Labor Notes back in 2017 with this great piece, and this will be linked in the show notes too, about how Black Lives Matter came to Philadelphia schools. So that's really good. So welcome, Tamara. Welcome, Dana, to the show.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. So I think just as kind of like to set the tone for those folks who may not be kind of familiar with all the work that's the Racial Justice Organizing Committee is doing, I thought it might be good to kind of start us off with a little bit of like looking at just I'll read out just what the mission statement is, and then maybe kind of turn to you tomorrow to give us a little bit of some of the background of kind of how this kind of Racial Justice Organizing Committee came to be and its kind of genesis, so to speak, and where bring us up to where we are now. So the mission of the Racial Justice Organizing Committee exists as a space for educators and allies to engage in collective learning and action for racial justice to make our schools as a result, the city, places that allow Black and Brown students, educators, and families to thrive, right? And hope, and throughout tonight, we're going to get into some of the 10 demands they've got before a radical educational transformation, which are just are freaking awesome. So, Tamara, why don't I turn to you first and maybe talk a little bit about what the Racial Justice Organizing Committee is all about, a little bit of some of its history and how it came to be.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, it started in 2015. It was the first committee that the Caucus of Working Educators had started under its umbrella, because the caucus itself had started started in 2014 itself, right? So then what happened is under this umbrella, and this really came out of, we were having book talks. We had just had which now everybody does, you know, joins us every summer, and it's like a big thing. But in its first iteration, the book talks that the Caucus of Working Educators hosted is, at that time, it was really like a hub to really talk about labor and progressive labor, rank and file movements, and how do union members get more involved, you know, because for a lot of us, especially if your union experience started here in Philly, maybe in the last 10, 15 years, it hasn't been like this very activated type of thing, right? It's been kind of a dormant action where you're like, who do I call when I have problems? And what's coming out of my check every 2 weeks? You know what I'm saying? So, and so because of that, we really wanted to engage people in a real way about not only how do you get involved in rank and file movements, but how does that intersect with Black movements, with Black bodies, with queer lives? Like, where does that look like, right? What does it look like when you connect that to housing issues and economic issues and things that are happening in the community around the school that are affecting your students and parents and families on a daily basis? So pop up, here comes the Racial Justice Organizing Committee. And then, like, literally within its first year, around 2016, fall 2016, Seattle, Washington had this massive action, a Black Lives Matter action, where over thousands of teachers walked out of school wearing Black Lives Matter shirts to support their students. And a group of members of the Racial Justice Organizing Committee, including myself, heard about this action and were like, what should we do here in the city? And so then that then became Black Lives Matter Week of Action. And the first Black Lives Matter Week of Action was January 2017, hence the article that was written in Labor Notes, right, about like, where did that come from? And so as that continued, then like by 2018, the summer of 2017, a group of members from the Caucus of Working Educators went to Free People, Free Minds, conference in Baltimore, and did a Black Lives Matter Week of Action presentation. And people were so excited about it that they were like, where do we sign up? Where can we join?
Right.
And then before you knew it, it became a national thing. And so now me and one other person serve on the National Steering Committee for Black Lives Matter at school. And now it has, you know, we got demands as of 2019, which included anti-racist training, more counselors, more cops, the hiring more Black educators, making African-American studies and ethnic studies mandated, right? And now we're embarking on a year of purpose to really highlight the principles, not just during the week in February, but now from October throughout the whole year till June. So that's something that's being launched that's actually on the Black Lives Matter at School.com webpage, if you're still looking at that. So, yeah.
Awesome. And I think that, you know, it's so good to see the kind of work you're pushing forward now, because obviously so much is dominated right now by, say, COVID-19 and back to school and the pandemic and all this. And then you can hear some of the voices even within, you know, I mean, I shouldn't say even within, but within, you know, like liberal communities say, well, we need to address this first. Right. And I don't know how you go about addressing anything even remotely connected to the coronavirus stuff without starting with racial justice. I mean, there is no.
Right. Especially when we have politicized COVID, right?
Exactly.
So we have politicized and racialized COVID, which basically means that even a pandemic falls victim to the racialized and politicized lines that the United States has had forever, right? It's like evidence number one, if you were doing a case, right? It's like, we can't even talk about the science and biology of it without acknowledging the fact that because we have fluid borders, because, you know, 50% of more cases of positive COVID cases are African-American and Latinx individuals. It's like, you cannot talk about the fact of why that is. It's not exactly because, you know, all the conspiracy theorists that were like, well, Black people are more prone. I'm like, no, it has a lot to do with access to healthcare, pre-existing conditions. It has to do with the fact that it's very similar to like if pneumonia hit the United States, right? In the Black community, it'd be death. You know, they'd be like, bye-bye, yep, see you later. We checked out, right? And to the majority community that makes up the power structure and the money structure, they would just get a vaccine or have some medicine because they have pneumonia. We're going to sleep and take care of it. We can rest, you know, da-da-da. That's not what's happening. So you have to look at, like, I don't know how you cannot look at everything. That's why I think these protests and these summer of uprisings,
yeah,
have really converged. One, because people are home, right? Two, most people don't have a job to lose. They're like, oh, well, I can go join this work because you fired me already, or I'm furloughed or whichever, right? Or the fact that you're shining a bright light on all the brokenness that has been broken for a very, very long time. And you are asking for people not just to pay attention to it, but to, like, do something about it, right?
No, absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, they talk about this as a way of kind of highlighting it's coronavirus is just basically, just like you said, it's put the light behind, like, kind of like behind the scenes, so you can see it all shooting through the cracks and the divisions and the fissures, right, that are already there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I always have that image of, like, when you see, like, you know, like these, you know, sci-fi, I'm a big sci-fi person, so I'm sorry for the references, but, you know, you see, like, you know, planets exploding before they actually, yeah, explode. Yeah. You see that, yeah, stuff shooting through, right? You see that, yeah, shooting through. Well, let me turn to you, Dana. So, I mean, what like, talk to me a little bit about kind of your way into this. What brought you to this the Racist Justice Organizing Committee, and kind of like, what's that work look like for you?
Sure. Well, I started out as a regular teacher in the school district of Philadelphia in my classroom, but just naturally, I guess, because of my personality, I just became an advocate, and that's when I was teaching in Kensington. I left America, and I went to Abu Dhabi, and I kind of lived in a lap of luxury for 2 years, and I taught overseas. But I really missed the dedication and just the connection I had with the students in Philadelphia. So I left, and I came back home. And I said to everybody when I came back to the School District of Philadelphia, like, I left paradise to come back here. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to let that trip be in vain. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure I transform the School District of Philadelphia since I came back. So, when I came back with a different set of eyes, and I was a bit more analytical about the positions that I had with the school district. And I began to pay attention to the systems that were in place that were prohibiting our children from achieving success. I identified those systems, talked with school district administrators, and then I saw a group of teachers who seemed to be advocating just as loudly as I was. Mm-hmm. And that's initially when I connected with the Caucus of Working Educators. And then after I connected with the caucus, it just, of course, naturally drew me to the work of the Racial Justice Organizing Committee and Melanated Educators Collective. So and with the Racial Justice Organizing Committee, I feel like I don't have to sugarcoat my advocacy and activism. I feel like it's a great place for people like me to have a voice, mm-hmm, and have support and figure out ways how you can eliminate the school to prison pipeline with people with like minds. My work in the racial and social justice committee mainly comes with policy. Mm-hmm. I am constantly speaking at the school board meetings about changing a policy or amending a policy or reviewing a policy because, just because I've been teaching for a long time, you realize that a number of policies don't exist, which is why certain systems aren't in place, or, you know, the systems are failing. And so with that analytical eye, I try to help other people, other organizations just kind of address their racial and social justice concerns.
Well, you know, so you're like that person that shows up to school board and they're all like, oh, shit, here she is again.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Here comes right? trouble.
Right?
Yes. And I call myself the troublemaker educator because they know what it is when I'm coming.
Right.
But, you know, over time,
right.
they understand that the things that I'm saying are valid and they're a bit more responsive to my asks these days.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, both of you brought up this stuff about, and I just, you know, this is one of the things that if people have been listening to our regular Friday podcast, you've heard Sean and I talk about this over the years, and we've been writing about this as long as Raging Chicken has existed, since back in kind of 2011. But you know, is that, you know, this is the kind of like, you know, one of the pulling the Band-Aid off certain aspects of kind of what it means to be kind of part of the militant minority in labor, right? Is that, you know, is the idea is that, you know, you all know, you got experience with labor, you got experience with unions, you know that if you're like a representative or you're an officer, right, you kind of stay within particular kinds of bounds, right?
Correct.
And which always limits the radical potential or even the progressive. I mean, we don't even have to jump all the way to radical. We could talk about just like progressive. Right, of a union movement, it limits that. So the whole idea about establishing caucuses is so essential because then you are not speaking for the union or from the union. You are a
Correct.
Member and you're making demands upon your union at the same time that you're part of it. And I think that the only time that we've ever seen like progress within labor is when we've had that kind of sense of a strong commitment to both labor, right, and justice, whether it's racial justice, whether it's gender justice, whether it's, you know, like sexual orientation, it's always been that both and push. And I think that's, you know, and sometimes, I know, was familiar with the Caucus of Working Educators and some of the struggles that they had with, you know, with the existing leadership of the AFT in Philly, the PFT. But it's also sometimes you get that dual quality of both your kind of like you're fighting a system and you're fighting your own leadership at times. Right. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So to have that space where you're actually saying, you know, this is what I love even about the way that you kind of both conceptualize, you know, the way that the mission of the Racial Justice Organizing Committee is and the kind of 10 demands of the committee is really kind of doing that both and thing. There's no question about the commitment to like, you know, on the job stuff. But it's like, no, guess what? We could do better. It's not just a service unionism. We're going to get the community together. We're going to get people together. Anybody who wants to be part of dramatic social movements and change, we're going to welcome into the fold.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. I think that what you just highlighted and what you just said is so important about, you know, the teachers union and possibly like the nurses union. Like, we are not producing products. You know what I mean? Like, this is not a warehouse type of union, or we're not producing cars. And if we mess up, it's not like a door jam. If we mess up, the child doesn't get educated. Right.
Exactly.
So because of that, we need to expect more out of our unions in supporting our quote unquote products, which are the children and their families. And I understand the limits of union leaders because they have to be loyal to their base.
Right.
And if you look at the School District of Philadelphia, the base of teachers is 70% Caucasian. So when you go and you scream to our PFT or the leader of the PFT, you know, we want this and we want that, you have to understand how his base would respond to those types of requests. So you need those outside agitators to try to, you know, spark these types of movements and have marches in City Hall just to explain to the community how important it is. And then in turn, the community perhaps can put some pressure or influence those officials to make these changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all that. Because you have to have that.
Because if not,
I think too, I like to say that we also, I really need for also all of us to stop pretending that public education is in the deception was created as some sort of vehicle for liberation and freedom.
Right.
There we go.
It wasn't. So you're not only fighting against the norms of that, but you are literally trying to turn it on its head every time, right? You're trying to challenge it because, like, until we can completely eradicate, or like Ava DuVernay likes to say the best, like, I remember the interview about 13, somebody asked, are you looking for reforms for prisoners or the prison system? She said, no, I'm looking for it to be blown up.
Yes, yeah, right.
Exactly. I'm looking for it to be like dismantled, because we know that reforms, you're just putting a Band-Aid over stuff so that you can still stay in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. We're trying to push things so far off the left that it's completely off the map altogether, right? Till we are actually building something in some sort of something that we want to see together. But until that happens, right, while you are waiting for that major change to take place, you still have to figure out what type of strategies can agitate the system today, especially mm-hmm. when you have students who are, you know, Black at Central, Black at Maxwell. We have students screaming their very lives about mm-hmm. racism and harassment Absolutely. By, you know, educators in school. And the fact is that when you go back and look at policy 249, which is the sexual harassment and racial harassment policy for the school district, they still have the SRC as the governing body of the policy. Mm-hmm. That is the actual policy that's supposed to protect children today on the school district website. They also have 2.5 pages of examples of racialized incidents. And the date, the original date on that policy is 2013.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so this is nothing new. Not that any of us are surprised. It's just the fact that now the students are standing up and yes, saying no more. They're saying, okay, look, we want to be protected. We want to be safe. Even in our virtual environments, we want to be able to choose the name we want to go by without mm-hmm. a bunch of pushback and a bunch of, like, misunderstanding, right?
Yep.
And the question is, like, what can you do to make that happen? Which leads us, like, directly into, like, why these 10 demands were so important to create and write and push. Well, mm-hmm.
and I see those 10 demands, and, like, this is a good time to kind of look at it. I'll give you a little couple stories to kind of as kind of background there too, as well as, like, I remember, like the Philly Student Union when their walkouts. Right. And mm-hmm. you had student walkouts in Philadelphia. Right. And those students, you could see what happened over kind of, you know, several days and then months and then eventually years. Right. Of getting that sense of that experience in kind of like going out. And at that time, having the fortune of having teachers and community members and activists there to yes. help them. Right. Uh-huh. Because I'll give you, you know, this is there was a similar issue that was going. I mean, it was the same kind of time. You had the rise of kind of like Black Lives Matter. And then you had kind of demands for racial justice up in the Lehigh Valley. Right. Uh-huh. And they took a lot of some of their cues from what was going on in the Philly Student Union. I remember getting in touch with some of the folks in the teachers union up there and saying, hey, look. People have gotten in touch with me. Some students have gotten in touch with me that they're looking to organize and stuff. I'm curious, how can I help from the union angle, right? To kind of help get the word out. And they wouldn't talk to me. They were very Ooh. Skeptical about it, right? Because they did not have that kind of infrastructure that had begun to take root in Philly. Right. For this kind of, like, you've got a kind of more progressive or radical caucus. You got kind of anti-racist organizing. Right. And of course, Philly's got a long, long history of that, too. So it didn't come out of the blue. But I remember back, I mean, I didn't know Philly very well, like, of East Coast towns. I mean, I grew up in kind of central New York, Utica, New York. Right. I mean, what I remember about Philly is I remember the great garbage strike.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh,
I remember.
Tamara and I were just talking about that.
Yeah. It's like, I remember driving through Philly. I don't know where my parents were taking me somewhere. Right. And they were driving through Philly and be like, oh, my God. I'd seen rats in New York like you wouldn't believe, but I'd never seen piles of garbage like that before in my life. And it's like, so I knew that, right? And then I knew through ska music, right? Philly had an amazing ska scene, and that's mm-hmm. like the kind of like the racism of Philly, right? Of that will be encountered in Philly, the long history of both the kind of the kind of anti-racist fight back and the kind of, like, you know, the attempts to kind of hold on to kind of white supremacy in the city. That's been going on for as long as I've been mm-hmm. alive.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then the third thing was, is that, you know, Philly was also one of the original laboratories, right, for the whole charterization and privatization of the schools.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I look at, you know, and I'm looking at these 10 demands, right? And I'm looking at these 10 mm-hmm. demands, which I'll turn it over to you guys to kind of unpack a little bit about what these are about. And I'm seeing like all of these things coming together, right? You're talking about infrastructure and resources and unionization and power. You're talking about direct kind of anti-racist fight back. And you're talking about a pushback against a kind of privatization and a kind of like profitization of our schools and our children, right? Mm-hmm. All in mm-hmm. kind of all together. And this is happening at the time where, of course, in the wake of George Floyd, again, this is not like, it wasn't magic that it was like his murder that was like, you know, oh, then some people suddenly woke up. I mean, this has been organizing. It's going on for a long time. That was just the thing right. that brings us to where right. we are now. So
right.
walk us through, so these kind of 10 demands and what has gone into kind of targeting of that. And I hear echoes of kind of Black Lives Matter kind of manifesto in this too as well.
Right. I guess we can go back and forth. I'll start with one and then maybe, you know, Tamar and
I
can go to two. So demand number one is the Racial Justice Equity Board. We think that it's so important for the School District of Philadelphia to be monitored by an outside entity that is consisting of community members, teachers, parents, and, you know, it would be my wish for these to be paid positions. Like, these are full-time paid positions. Mm-hmm. We're actually trying to work with CASA, which is the administrators union, because this is something that they want to see as well. They call it a diversity, equity, and inclusion board, but it is the same thing that we're requesting, which is the oversight committee for the School District of Philadelphia. We need people to monitor the hiring practices. We need to make sure that students are getting into schools in a fair way. We need somebody to monitor the budget and the contracts. So in order to make sure that everything is running the way that it should in the School District of Philadelphia, we are asking for an oversight committee. And I actually went to the school board. I told you, that's my whole thing. I went to the school board in January, and I asked them for this. But this is something that we're going to push even more with our demands. Mm-hmm. Tamara, would you like to add on to that?
Well, yeah. No, I just think that you said it all. Because it basically is so interesting, because when we were sitting had a seat at the MLK Dare table several years back, mm-hmm. One of the things that was a part of that manifesto, we did that big march from 440 down to the president's house. It was basically the same thing, like oversight committee for police, like having that, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we also have seen these type of committees already be a part of teacher contracts, like in St. Paul, Minneapolis teacher union contract.
Yep.
They have an equity board that basically oversees suspensions and expulsions and any sort of like racial harassment to basically make sure that it's above board, right? Mm-hmm. We also like the next one is really important, like the implementation and funding of restorative justice and trauma responsive practices in schools.
Yes.
Because we find that, so when you say more counselors know cops, and of course, you know, the school board has redressed cops into safety officers.
Right.
They still come from the police department, right?
Totally.
So it's almost like dressing up a rat and being like, isn't he pretty? You're like, good.
It's still a rat.
It's still a rat. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And I'm still disgusted, right?
So I see the tail.
Right. You're like, no. But I do believe that what happens is that when there's like this dissonance among teachers about safety in the school, it has to do with how many times the school board, school district has promised something. Like when we took away kindergarten suspensions, which I think that's a good thing. But the problem is you didn't bring in any more support.
Nope.
So, like, I've had friends who have had fifth graders who have broken glass in windows, and that glass has ended up in their corneas, and they're like, okay. Like, you still need more additional support, like, to have that. And being, like, a former case manager, you have to have teams that you are able to deploy out, right? You got to make a full commitment to the fact that many of our behavior issues in school are directly related to trauma and mm-hmm. mental health care,
totally.
Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes right into the demand for special education programs. So we know we're going to a virtual setting where special ed is, you know, to say they're getting the short end of the stick, it's not, doesn't even cover it, right? They're getting no part of the stick whatsoever, right? Not to mention, just last year, you had over 100 vacancies in special ed. So yep. When people celebrate and say, oh, look, our budget's going to stay the same. I'm like, is that the same budget where there was no special ed teachers and they only had 30 occupational support and PT? And then yep. People then get that look like, oh, here she comes. Like, I'm just saying, like, is that what we're happy about? Because that's not a good thing. Like, that's a problem. Like, when I found out, like, I'm from Chicago originally. Mm-hmm. So I taught in Chicago and New York.
That's why she has that accent. Sounded like she's from South Carolina.
I was like, so how is it that you have thousands of kids in the district and you have 30 PTs?
Yeah.
OTs? Like, that's it? They should be, like, stressed out about to run out the school. You know what I'm saying? I don't know how that's working. So that was one thing. We talked about robust special ed training and supports for all school staff. Because we also have had paras now, the one-on-ones, they've combined positions, but haven't paid nobody any more money.
Yep.
So that's happening too. And then
I just wanted to add about demand number three, because I know you're about to kill demand number four. So before tomorrow kills demand number four, I just wanted to say for demand number three, in terms of our teachers, our special education teachers, they also need to be more supported. Oftentimes, I find the teachers who are the special education teachers are the first ones to get pulled if a teacher is absent to cover a class. So if those are the teachers who are constantly being pulled, how in the world are the children that they are supposed to service getting their services? This is an issue that is rampant in the school district of Philadelphia. And it's because, I mean, there are a whole lot of reasons why, but the end result is that children aren't getting their services. So the special education teachers definitely need more support. They need more resources, and they need to not be seen, in the special education teachers as well as the parents, as being expendable. Like, okay, something goes wrong, let's pull them first. No, we're not doing that. Like, there needs to be a better system in place so all children get the benefit of learning. We also want to make sure that our children who are identified as special education, if they get the tools that they need in order to not be identified, they don't have to have that identification for all 12 years. But if they do, then the parents also need to be given resources of how to continue their education once they leave the school district of Philadelphia. So,
right, because let me tell you mm-hmm. need to make sure that you maintain their IEP to college, because I know that when I teach in higher ed, I get letters all the time from disability offers. For my mm-hmm. students that need more time, da da da. Because when I used to work on the dark side, this one charter school that I will not name because it's so illegal and it's still open. I'm always like,
oh Lord. So we gonna have a whole different conversation about right. something like that.
I think so. One of the things that used to happen, I mean, yeah, I one time I was at an IEP meeting and the CEO was encouraging, because I had updates for the students' IEP, right?
Yep.
I was like, they can do these more. I was like, for one, I was like, when was the last time this was updated? Like, when Jesus died? Like, what is going on with this update? I said, because he's doing, like, more stuff in my classroom, right?
It's so, a little dusty.
I was like, so they, you know, updated the stuff after they, you know, whatever. And then the CEO was like, oh, well, if he's, like, writing an entire essay with a thesis statement, then we should remove his IEP. I said, he's still dyslexic.
Right.
Right.
Like, he still has a reading disorder.
Right.
I said, so that should follow him through college if he wants to go to college, right? Like, I have worked, you know, with him because I can, but this is, you know, what you can do. So that, yeah, and we also need to stop outsourcing. Okay, I'm saying that again. We need to stop outsourcing the services to people that aren't even special ed certified. Like, a lot of the organizations and companies that the school district outsources, only because I used to work for some of them. It's like, I've worked on the dark side a lot. So that's why they really don't like it when I come to talk.
Wow. No, like, I mean, I mean, I look at this. I mean, I grew up. My sister's a special needs kid. My mom taught in special education for a while. She worked like this, and you see this firsthand. And you know, it's very simply it's a question of power, right? These are folks.
It really is.
These are folks who do not have the kind of like the organizing strength and the power, like as a constituency, which means that we, just like you said, this is why it's got to be all kids, because that's exactly what they do. Say, well, look, you know, the special needs kids, like, well, you know what, you know, maybe if we just pull that teacher, no one's going to really kind of chime up about it, because, you know, the well-to-do parents who are in there, you know, their kids are going to be taken care of, right? I mean, that's how that ends up working out. Let me just jump in for 1 second right now, so I know we had some people that have jumped on, and we will have some time, probably about 10 minutes or so. We'll kind of open up if anybody does want to call into the studio and want to add any comments or questions on this. We also want to kind of remind you, this is my name is Kevin Mahoney, and this is Out to Coop Live. This is part of our kind of podcast series for Raging Chicken. And if you want to kind of support this show, right, keep it going strong, you can do so for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress, or you can go to down right at the bottom of that little app you got there and send us a little gift, cup of coffee, gold mic, whatever it might be. You can buy golden beans from Podbean to help us support the show. And again, I'm talking here with Tamara Anderson and Dana Carter from the Racial Justice Organizing Committee in Philadelphia. So I didn't want to kind of jump in, disrupt too much there, but I want to make sure the folks who kind of jumped in the podcast partway through knew kind of where we are and what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Some station identification.
There you go. So one of the things we see in all of these, and I want to get to that number four, because Dana, you already kind of like set Tamara up on this one and say, okay, she's ready to roll on this. But one of the things that I want to kind of point to, just to make sure that because if we don't get a chance to get through all of them by the time people want to kind of call in, is that one of the things that I love about what's going on here is that it's pushing the horizon and saying not what do we think is doable under existing kind of like ways of thinking, but what is it that we want? What does it look like to establish a school, right? To see the school as a kind of a locus of change. And it's almost like flipping this scenario on its head. Like, you know, we always hear, we all know, you know as well as I do, you've been involved with education as long as you do, you know that schools, everyone expects schools to do everything, right? Everyone expects schools to solve all the social problems, right? And we really know that the number one indicator, right, of kind of how somebody's going to do in life and how they're going to kind of do in school has to do with their zip code and has to do with their socioeconomic status, right? And you add that into kind of a system of kind of racial injustice, right? A racial oppression, right? That basically kind of like just doubles down on that very structure, right? So they say, well, look, if we want to solve those problems, we got to do that kind of outside the school. But what this does, what these 10 demands do, and said, okay, you want to say that schools are going to be the ones that we're going to solve this? Okay, we'll take that charge. This is what we need then. Right?
Yeah.
This is what the school should be if it's going to be the engine of change. So let me put over to you again tomorrow now. And kind of we're just about to talk about, and we talked about specific programs here. And now we're starting to kind of widen out a little bit to kind of see, here's that horizon, right? This is what this needs to be in the schools.
Yeah. Like 4, 5, 6, and 7, I'm going to smash them together.
There you go.
Which is because they are literally what you just said, just perfect. Like, it is basically like, if you want us to, if you're saying that we are supposedly spinning plates on one leg, right? Yep. So this is what we need to make the magic happen. This is what we really need to break, not only the pipeline to prison, but to really transform the pipeline to poverty and the cycle, right? So we demand that trans, queer, and gender nonconforming students and staff, oh my gosh, I can say it 100 times. So they gave this wonderful policy number 252, which was about protecting from discrimination for gender nonconforming students, trans, queer students, and for faculty. And then they gave these trainings to the teachers. And I'm just going to let that marinate in silence because it was kind of like a funeral. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I attended the training. She's not
I'm like, who did this terrible thing? Right? Like, it was really bad. And it's funny because in the newspaper, Al Jazeera, Mother Jones, they were like, Philly has this robust, you know, trans queer policy. And I was like, and then they train people. That should be like the at the end, right?
Was it was it like one of these things where you go like, okay, next PowerPoint slide, please?
Right. I was like, and no. And some of it has to do that it doesn't have, it has, like, I remember the big blowout in students with their names in Google Classroom, right? Mm-hmm. And I saw some of the teachers and parents, you know, like some of that homophobia definitely like spilled over into social media. And I was like, so this is still an issue, right? Mm-hmm. So this is definitely something to talk about. And we have tons of partners, the Attic, Mazzoni Center.
I think I just lost somebody. Oh, there we go. I think I lost you tomorrow. Nope, gotcha.
You get me? Okay.
Yep.
I'm sorry. And so then we also demand equitable hiring practices. And not just, we do want to hire and retain Black teachers. Let me just say that. We also want to make sure that parents are not getting paid $14.5 a year. Let me just say that for the chief seats. Like, they work a lot of hours, work a lot of time. But because of $14.5, though, they also have to work other jobs just to even stay afloat. And then on top of this, we also need to make sure that we need to have mandated anti-racist training, because in order for you to diversify your hiring practices, you have to diversify and decolonize your lens, right? Mm-hmm. Because I have lots of principals who will tell me, well, it doesn't matter what the teacher is as long as they're the best teacher. And I said, well, that's funny, because the best teacher to you is always a white one.
Like, that's funny how that works. That's funny.
Right? Like I have referred, even to my daughter's former school, I have referred Black teachers to the principal. I know he was like, when is she graduating? I was like, here are 10 people that are amazing. They should come and work for you, right? And then we also demand culturally responsive curriculum. It doesn't matter, though, if we demand this. Number 7 is the linchpin for all of this stuff. If you don't have an anti-racist lens, if you don't have a mind and a lens of how to decolonize the curriculum and the school, you will continue to limp along and do the same thing. It's just like there was this this TED Talk that Melody Hobbs had gave eons ago about being racially brave to talk about race, right? And she was saying about this whole story of ESPN, this quintessential Southern white guy was president at the time, and he wanted diversified ESPN. And so people came to him and said, so you want us to hire, like, the best Black person or just the best person? And he said yes to both.
Yeah.
Yes. And as a result, that whole cycle he was president, ESPN ended up diversifying their workforce by like 50%. Mm-hmm. So it takes like a laser-like focus for you to do it, right?
Yep.
And then, of course, that goes into non-toxic schools and asbestos. Yeah, we would like to breathe. You know what I'm saying?
Some well, you know, it's funny. This stuff right here, this is the kind of stuff, this one is, when I saw this one too as well, I said, man, this is why, I mean, again, this is not why per se, but it's like the fact that you're including the actual physical structures of the buildings themselves is so absolutely critical. I mean, I think everybody out there needs to know things like this. It's like, you know, there was like this huge increase in huge increase in crime, right? In the uh-huh. late 60s and 70s, right? And then it was, oh, a crime that, you know, that's still the legacy we're living under, that kind of the political fear that was kind of like, you know, about the crime wave that's coming. That's old, you know, sorry all you liberals out there, but that's Joe Biden's super predator right there, right? I mean, right. This is that whole time, right? And then they found it was funny because there was an increase of this that was happening not just in the United States but other places around the world. And then they found out that, holy crap, the lead in the paint, right, mm-hmm. is causing all sorts of brain disorders, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. that is expressing themselves in this violent behavior and criminal activity or just being dropped out of society, right? And then they find out that, oh, my God, the crime wave goes down. Well, how did it go down? Well, they took the lead out of gasoline and they took the lead out of paint. Right. Mm-hmm. And those communities that were hit the hardest were communities of color. Poor mm-hmm. communities of color were hit the hardest. Rural poor communities were hit also. Mm-hmm. Right. And then so you see this kind of stuff. So when we're talking about the buildings that are free of pest and lead and asbestos, right? It's not just mm-hmm. kind of like, oh, we want pretty buildings. No, this goes to the core of what we're talking about, say, you know, talk about environmental justice, right?
Right.
Right in our backyards. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but that was
no, yeah. No, that's right, because you don't want cellular trauma. That's
exactly.
Your trauma. But nobody talks about that. It's just like when we talk about Flint, I can't tell you how many people I've talked to, even when I've written 40 blogs about it, that I'm like, you do realize the issue is not that Michigan has poor water sources. It's surrounded by a great lake. Two of them, in fact.
Yep.
And they have fresh water. It's just the governor at the time switched the water to the river, which basically was a chemical dumping site forever.
Bingo.
So now you have generations of people dying of Legionnaire's disease. You have generations of people that have lead so high that on a cellular level, they're going to pass it down to their children, because that's exactly what lead does. And then we don't talk about the fact that being in pest-filled places, people actually develop. I have teachers I used to work with in New York, because New York, you know, has used to have these high rises and all these crazy things. And I have teachers who are in their 40s and 50s who literally had allergies to pest droppings.
Yep.
Because I was like, is that a thing? She was like, oh, yeah. Like, if you're from here, like, I went to school in New York public schools and developed an allergy to rodent dropping. I said, God, no. And these were mostly, like, older teachers of color, yep. Right? So this is like a generational thing. And if we really want to stop it and move forward in some sort of fidelity and integrity, we can't just like, you know, say, oh, we're going to make sure your schools are pretty and we'll give you an anti-racist training that we'll throw up a video and good luck, blink, blink, and hope everything's better, right? We basically, because even as a supervisor of student teachers, you know, I feel like I am an intervention when I see them their last year of college.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, well, let me just put some magic sauce on top of you before I send you out to go teach children.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, we also have to talk about like the pipeline, like what are we like as things become more corporate? There's also this need because of the middle states and all this stuff, and which I know you know about as a professor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like it waters down your curriculum if you're not careful, and it forces people not to challenge and question like what is happening, right? Like, or the history or the fact that where has this happened before? Like, you just talked about student movements and student walkouts. Like, they go all the way back to 1960,
yep.
Right? Until today. And so the fact that every 20 years, every 30 years, every 10 years, we have another series of uprisings, another series of people fighting against the norm means that we never make enough change to actually get us to the other side.
Yep.
You know, there's always
Well, that's because
there.
the people, you have to understand, just like how Tamara started off before, the educational system really wasn't meant for everybody to succeed. So as long as the people who are in power continue to be mm-hmm. in power, there is no motivation for them to change the current situation. We have to make mm-hmm. that. We have to make them motivated to change, because people with old money aren't willing to. I mean, what is the motivation for them to do any type of racial or social justice work unless their children or their grandchildren convince them that it's important, right? So we need the white people with good sense to start speaking to their cousins and their fathers and their mothers and their brothers, so they can come into this work with a genuine concern for the people and the students. Just to your point about the asbestos in schools, there was a class action lawsuit in 1986 right here in Pennsylvania, where the manufacturers of asbestos were sued, and the case got settled. If we knew all the way back then, I mean, I remember when I was in the fifth grade, the eighth grade students walked out in Levering, and I think that was 86. Franklin Learning Center kids walked out in 91. Why are we still talking about the same things? And it's just basically because the people don't care. You can't tell me that you care, and it's 30 years later, and we're still talking about the same issues. They don't care, so we have to make them care. And I think it's ridiculous that teachers are getting sick, students are getting sick because of toxic schools in the year 2020. So we could talk about that all day. Our last demand is for the school board of Philadelphia to accept our Black Lives Matter week at school's curriculum, which is something that we've been asking for forever. In addition to that, we really want them to act like Black Lives Matter in the School District of Philadelphia and to remove any school board member with a history of racial bias. I'm just going to say on a personal level, I don't know how you can make policies that benefit children of color if you are a Trump supporter. I don't understand how you could teach children with a genuine heart and genuine concern if you are a follower of Donald Trump and his policies. But just on the school board level, those people who are in charge of making the policies that affect our children's lives, I think we have to, you know, be a little bit more investigatory about their own beliefs and how they behave in their personal lives towards children of color.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say, look at this. They need to be taken down just like the Rizzo statue, right? bring them down. Just like that, because I couldn't agree more. Is that, and this is where it's not, well, two things. And again, if there's anybody out there that's got a burning issue, what you kind of want to call, you got a comment, you got some question, feel free to kind of call in the show anytime. You should be have a little button at the bottom of your app that says kind of call in. We can take your call. You got a comment, you got something to add, you got a question, I'd be more than happy to take your calls for the next, I'll say 10, 15 minutes or so before we wrap up the show. But one of the things that now, of course, I lost my train of thought, right? Oh, no. The whole idea is that, well, two things. Like, one, you know, it does become, from my perspective at least, I'll speak only for myself here, that it becomes a question that, you know, it is about kind of individuals, right? So it's not just like some sort of abstract system that's out there. There's actually real people making real decisions and real choices, right? And that we have to kind of basically hold those folks accountable. And then this goes back to the other, then this goes to the other point that you're making, right? The whole idea that, you know, look, why are we still fighting these battles, right? And I think that, you know, the lesson that I look at, like, Gen Z folks now, and I'm like, fuck yeah. it's about time. You know, it's like, I was like, you need bail money? I got you. Right? I
mean,
it's
that's like, you know,
whatever.
Right, taking
it's like,
over.
Because I'm looking at that and I'm saying, because I think they understand, right? That if we just kind of say, hey, look, things are getting better and it's automatically going to magically progress, that things are going to get better. Say, no. It's going to return to the default system, right?
Definitely
which has been here since the founding of this country. Right. So I'm looking at that. And I'm saying, you know, like, you know, the kind of message that you'd have for folks. I mean, obviously, I mean, you're on the ground fighting the fight in Philadelphia, right? But you've got folks, you know, that you know can use a little kind of bolstering up about, you know, why is it so important to go big, right? Why is it so important to go hard and not just trust that things will get better if we're just say like, got a good relationship with management, for example.
Right. I mean, you got to look at the history of our country. You know, things have not gotten better unless there was a drastic change. And one thing I can say, and I know a lot of people look at me like I'm crazy, I'm not a Trump supporter, but what I will say is that the election of Donald Trump has sparked a sense of unity among people, advocates, activists, and I've never seen this in my life. I'm 42 years old. So that is one benefit. If there's any benefit from his presidency, it is that I don't believe we have ever been more focused than we are at this point right now. So we don't want to lose that. We can't lose that momentum. And we need to take it to the next level. Aside from that, what good is it to grab at sand when it's boulders right in front of you that you can lift with no problem? Like, what are you doing? Why are you looking for the smallest thing to do in order to make a difference? And I understand that everybody is not capable of doing everything. But in terms of education, and this is why, you know, I'm a little testy when it comes to certain educators. You have children in front of you. So I don't understand how you don't speak up, because at the end of the day, if you're quiet, then you harm a child.
Yeah.
So you have to speak up for the greater good, because you're a teacher. And if you're not cut out for that, then perhaps you need a different profession. All due respect. But this is what we require today. We require teachers who know how to advocate for their kids. And if they don't know how to advocate, if they don't know how to be activists, then they need to reach out to someone who can advocate for them. You can go ahead, Mar.
Here.
No, you done said everything. I mean, I also would like to say too, this is what I used to say all the time during the crack epidemic, right? Mm-hmm. So when the crack epidemic was happening, it was killing Black communities and, you know, suburban and white communities, or people were moving to the suburbs, and it was all this idea of escape. And this mm-hmm. and this idea, we're going to build up these, like, these communities, these gated communities to keep stuff out. And then what happened? It came right to your community.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When gun violence is in Chicago, it spills over into the suburbs. It spills over into hunting communities. It spills over into rural communities. So I say every day, how many lessons do you need to learn that if you wait, it will come knocking on your door? In
That's
the
right,
guise
girl.
Of your dead child, in
That's
the guise
right, honey.
Of your overdose cousin, in the mm-hmm. guise of your dead uncle, in mm-hmm. the guise of your lung, your toxic poison father, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to do that. But instead of you waiting for it to, like, actually hit your doorstep, maybe you should actually look beyond yourself and say, hey, this is what I can do. Because all of us are capable of doing something, even if it's just a small hanging fruit. It's the small actions that lead to greater actions, right? And we can always join something. Like, that's always my thing when people sit and complain, oh, I can't believe that such and such is happening, or da 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 da. Something as small as what's happening with the sanitation workers here in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to some people, they could care less that as of last week, it's 125 that have tested positive for COVID. But I'm like, if you have a car and you have access and you got two neighbors, go do a drive to the sanitation center.
Mm-hmm.
They're so nice. It's so easy.
Yep.
And when I tell you they smile from ear to ear every time, I go once a week. They're like, this helps. Because the
right.
news, the media is not telling our story.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. people think that we are being lazy. Or I have people mm-hmm. post on my Facebook page, well, what are they doing to take care of themselves? How dare you?
Mm-hmm.
They are providing a service that you definitely don't want to provide.
Exactly.
Sitting
right.
on the back of a truck with trash and maybe some peepee, some masks that
maybe.
May last and may not. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention they've been shorted overtime. Because the excess of trash they've had due to the pandemic. But all of that, to me...
No access to fresh water.
Right. Is you being connected to what's on the ground. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's like a burning in my system when people sit and they decide I'm the person they should call to complain. Which I don't know why they thought that was a good idea. Because I'm just like, no. Like, who have you connected with? Who have you talked to? Even if it's just going to a meeting, even if it's just making phone calls, even if it's just making sure that mutual aid is supported and people can get
yeah.
groceries to people. You don't have to always physically be in the space, but you
yeah.
definitely have to stop thinking of things for just yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that's it. You know what? I've got this, you know, I got this article that I want to write that's in the back of my head. Like how many people got this going on. Right. But it's
right.
And I just got the title of it in my head is kind of like, you've been schooled. Right. And,
yes.
And what I mean about that is like, and you know, I mean, I grew up like for the start of my life was like a single parent family with a, you know, my sister, we have an allergy to the MMR, like to the MMR vaccine. My sister got brain damage because of the result of that and medical malpractice and a whole bunch of other stuff that thrust us into poverty. Right. My mom couldn't work to take care of my sister. Right. We grew up on food stamps. I still freaking can't stand even the thought of powdered milk. It makes my stomach turn.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
About what that meant. But, you know, and I look to things like, you know, both, you know, the, you know, grew up Catholic, I'm Irish Catholic, grew up Catholic. So I look both to the church, right, and to school as places that kind of gave me some sort of light out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I, in particular school, because the church pretty quickly, that they sold me down the river. So I'm like, okay,
mm-hmm.
you guys don't practice what you preach. That was pretty quick. I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to school, right, I bought in hard to that whole ideology, right, that this is the place that you can strive and you can thrive. And I'm not saying that's not true. But the thing was, is that, you know, growing up in the 80s, right, growing up in the 70s and 80s, born in 1969,
mm-hmm.
growing up in that time, it was all about the separation, that education was going to separate you from your
sure
community.
Was.
And
yeah,
it gave yeah. you that idea that you need to look down upon people that are working
mm-hmm.
at the gas station. You need to look down. You don't, you know, you take your kid and I see my neighbors do this and look and take them out when the garbage collectors are coming. Sanitation workers are coming. Like, you don't want to end up like them. Right.
Right.
That was right. that pernicious ideology mm-hmm. that was kind of like, and it felt, you know, as it felt the flip side of it, like, oh, there's hope here. I don't have to be like this. Like, I don't have to stick in this situation. I can crawl my way out. But that's the devil's work, if you ask me, because that is about disconnecting us from the very people that we should be most connected to in our communities. And so I mean, that example is so great to hear, because I mean, that is one of those things that, you know, I try to stress with my own students. And I think that is really at the core of what we see happening and what we see happening in these movements now, about people making those connections and say, you know what, we've been looking up to the wrong people for a long time.
Which is basically the argument that Du Bois and Ida B. Wells had all the time.
Yeah.
You know, Ida B. Wells always would write letters to him. And he was like, if we just educate people, then lynchings will go down. He's like, they'll lynch you too.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what that is.
And they'll read,
like,
poetry while they do it, right?
Right. Like, she was like, you need to, like, stop. You need to get off that pedestal and start really looking. I mean, it's the same. Like, my mom was one of the youngest presidents of her union local of IEA when I was growing up. So I spent a lot of my time being dragged from meeting to meeting with my Etch-a-Sketch and hopes and dreams. You know what I'm saying? And I think, like, even being Catholic and being Chicagoan Catholic, where it's like Black Catholics and Irish Catholics on two separate sides of the city, right?
Yep.
And the fact that I went to an Irish Catholic high school that basically told me, as a person who's an altar server, well, you know, we don't do Black History Month here. How does that work when Black History Month is celebrated at cathedral with the bishop? Mm-hmm. What does that happen at? Only in this little circle of the world? So that, like, from a very early age, it's always been like, you were responsible for somebody else. You know, even as an only child, like, I'm responsible for somebody next to me, period. Like, no question that. And not because I want to wear a big badge or get some shiny bauble light and be in the press. I could care less about that being. Like, the whole point is that what can happen to make change happen in people's lives, even if it's just a connection to services, a connection to knowing that this can help you, or knowing that when we were sold a bad bill of goods by Comcast 5 years ago, when we had opportunity to actually have them pay taxes, we said, when they told us, we'll give people free internet, and blah, 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 we didn't listen to the fact that the internet was such a low speed that that's enough to basically turn on your cell phone and maybe turn around the circle. You know what I'm saying? Right, yeah. Like, that's it. Like,
with the GPS.
Yeah. Right. That's all. You're like, I can't even watch Hulu because it just keeps freezing. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't even watch your free Netflix that you stole from your sister because nobody can watch it because it's 25 Mbps. But we didn't ask them questions.
Yeah, but I guarantee the one thing that will come up is the advertisement for cyber charters.
Yes, right. Yes.
It's built into the hardware.
I'm right. Sure.
It, like, comes up every 5 minutes. You're like, how is this a thing that's an ad when I can't even get the internet? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, okay. Yeah, so, no, I don't know. I think it's, like, and I think that's what's even coming to light with the youth now, right? With PSU, Youth for Black Lives, like, all these youth organizations that are asking and demanding to be seen and to be heard, right? Is the fact that we can no longer sit back and pretend like, oh, it's just a few bad apples, or it's just a few this, or the rubber room is where we send them when it happens. Yeah, but you don't say anything when they come back. I have heard students in the hallway be like, girl, oh, here he comes. Like, he gonna call somebody the N-word before he leaves today. What?
Yep.
Like, is that a thing? You know, I was like,
right. And that's acceptable.
And I'm just like, and then of course, I think as a parent, like, I've had to advocate for parents who were scared to go talk to the principal because they were like, you know, he's gonna do something, you know, to my kid in the special ed program. And I said, what's your kid's name? Okay, come on, we'll go talk to him together. Because I was like, I know he don't want to ever see my face up in there. But if I have to use a little privilege I have for good, then that's what I'm going to do. Like, you also should not have to fight these battles alone either.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this has been awesome. So before we kind of wind up for the show, if anybody does have the quick comments, if they want to jump in, please feel free. But like that kind of close out a little bit. First, let me say, like, this has been awesome. Like, I feel, you know, I don't know if you all get this feeling too as well, but both are kind of feeling like I feel charged up, right? And angry and sad all at the same time. You know, it's like that.
You feel like a teacher.
Yeah. it's like
all the time.
This is kind of where we're at. Right. But it's, you know, and I, you know, like to kind of, you know, give you opportunity to say, you know, kind of close out. What are some things you want to leave people with and anything else you want to plug specifically that you're working on? I mean, you kind of mentioned at the top of the show a little bit about what you got coming up here, coming up in the fall. Definitely want to kind of hear some plugs in that. And also definitely kind of, as this kind of moves on, man, I hope I can have you back on the show, because I'd love to kind of stay up to date with what's going on, kind of where we are, the struggle, and how we can kind of amplify the work that y'all are doing, because it's just, it's freaking great stuff.
I can start, and then tomorrow can close. We have an open meeting for the Racial Justice Organizing Committee tomorrow at 4:00. You can check our Facebook page or Instagram page, or Tamara and I's personal Facebook page for information on how to sign up. It's 4:00 tomorrow. We still want people to uplift our demands, our racial justice 10 demands for radical education transformation. You can find that on the Racial Justice Organizing Committee website. I'm doing a effort to rename Philadelphia streets and schools. This is also another racial justice organizing effort. So far, we have 4 schools identified: Woodrow Wilson, Benjamin Franklin, and that is a tribute to the class of 1970 because they wanted that change to Malcolm X High. Ed B. Anderson, that is the principal's request, and Samuel Gompers. So please support that effort. You can find more information on the Racial Justice Committee's website.
Yeah, we got links right down in the show notes that you can click right on there. It'll take you there. You can explore the page. And I definitely like, I think that everyone should also check out, we didn't get a chance to talk about this, but the Educators Responding to National Uprising resource guide that y'all have on the site is freaking amazing. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the fact that you got it broken down from, like, you know, kindergarten right up through kind of secondary, I mean, it's just freaking fantastic. So tomorrow, let's close out with you.
We also have the Philly Youth Freedom Dreaming event that we are doing with Poppin, and it's happening August 26th. And that information is also on the Racial Justice Organizing Facebook page. There's a sign in, you have to RSVP. It's like bit.ly forward slash, and it's Freedom Dreams with PHs, the PHREEDOM for that. And then you can also sign up on the webpage to, if you want to get like information or be on our listserv. We have like a Google group where information goes out all the time. If you're like an email person, or if you're like a Facebook person, which I know for young people is like MySpace right now, you can basically go on there. You can also go on Instagram, because we also post our flyers and stuff there. And also, of course, you know, please check out the National Black Lives Matter at School webpage, at www.blacklivesmatteratschool.com.
And Barwee too?
Yes, because Barwee has there's a link on our page, but there's also a link to the Black Lives Matter curriculum, and there's also a link to the Year of Purpose, and there's also a link to Black Lives Matter and Get the Youth Vote Out, because we also are, like, we're supporting getting all these 18-year-olds registered to vote by October for the November election, and letting people know that even if you have a felony record, if you are homeless, you can still register to vote, actually. So, yes.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I'll put as many of those links that I can squeeze into our show notes down there to absolutely, because this, I mean, at the very least, you know, get on over to the Racial Justice Organizing Committee website. There's links to lots of this stuff. We have a bunch of this stuff embedded in the show, kind of without a doubt. And, you know, and next week, just so for everybody knows, for next week is the back to school at Kutztown University, the university in which I work. And of course, they are going back face to face, because grit and fortitude will save you from the virus. virus, right?
Wow.
That's apparently what President Kenneth Hawkinson will do. So hopefully, since it's the start of classes next week, that we'll get someone from the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights one of the student organizers from that at Kutztown.
Oh, wow.
And also, hopefully, we're going to be able to get her on. She's a student organizer. There's a bunch of students, but one student in particular that working as a solidarity campaign at East Stroudsburg University with food service workers, which is freaking awesome.
Oh, nice.
Stuff.
Wow. Oh, how
yeah.
nice.
Yeah, good. Some good stuff going on. I'll tell you, there's some good organizing going on everywhere that you look. And, you know, I only wish I could do this full time. That's all I got to say. So once again, I want to thank Tamara Anderson and Dana Carter. Please, thank you so much for joining me tonight for Out the Coop Live.
Thank you for
having us. Thank you.
Oh, this is a blast.
I got made up for nothing.
We have to get you out. We have to get you got to get some more members. We'll get the video feed going next time. We'll get so you'll be all set.
Right, I was like, thank you for no video.
Man, that's great. Well, and thank you all for tuning in. I appreciate it. And, you know, you could do something really simple to help kind of promote the show is just to kind of share this with your friends. You can share the link to our podcast. You can share it for this particular show. You just go to Podbean app. You go to iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. You can share this. This will also be posted to our Facebook page at Raging Chicken. This will be also on our YouTube page. So save this. Link to it and share it with your friends all over social media and kind of get the word out here and help kind of amplify the amazing work that is going on in kind of like activist communities all across this state and across this country. So once again, you can support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/RC Press. You could show us some love during the live show right next week, right? But give us a little gift at the bottom of the show. So next week, we hope to see you back here at Raging Chicken. We'll also be back on Friday for our regular Out the Coop podcast with Sean Kitchen. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We're out for this evening. Going to leave you once again with some Jonathan Mann. Are there people of the future? Damn straight there are. See ya!